and welcome to the Middle East Today. Coming to you from Beirut, I'm Mariam Saleh. More than 160 pro-reform protesters have been arrested in Saudi Arabia since last February. Human Rights Watch says human rights violations in Saudi Arabia has always been a great concern. Now, detainees, including children, are commonly the victims of systematic violations of due process and fair trial rights, including arbitrary arrest and torture and ill treatment in detention. Today, we discuss the Saudi crackdown on its citizens and the kingdom's role in the backing the Bahraini kingdom's crackdown on peaceful protests. Now, I am joined by Professor Hilal Khashan here in Beirut. He's professor of political sciences in the American University of Beirut. I'm also joined by Dr. Fuad Ibrahim. He is the author of The Shiites of Saudi Arabia. He's joining us from London. I want to welcome you both to this episode. Let me begin with you, Professor Khashan. Now, when you take a look at what's happening inside Saudi Arabia, why is Saudi Arabia always in some kind of an immunity when it comes to criticism about the violations of human rights?
You mean immunity from within or from the international community?
Generally from the international community, of course, especially the West, especially the United States, which speaks a lot about,
sure,
of course, human rights.
It goes without saying that Saudi Arabia is a country of vital interest to the West, specifically to the United States. And keep in mind that there is a strategic defense treaty between Saudi Arabia and the U.S. that dates back to the 1940s. So the U.S. Is very much keen on speaking a diplomatic language that does not deviate from that of the Saudi royals.
Mm-hmm. Yes, let me go to Professor Fuad Ibrahim. It seems that protesters in Saudi Arabia lately have been challenging what the kingdom calls illegal protests, peacefully calling for their rights in their own country. How do you look at that, I mean, as a Saudi and as an observer?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The Saudi royal family is looking at these protests being illegal in religious and political sense. The Saudi Grand Muftis issued a fatwa lately condemning, denouncing the demonstrations in Egypt, and now they have the same fatwa against the protesters in Saudi Arabia. And this means that the Saudi government and the security forces have the right to crush all these protests and use all violence against the protesters. And unfortunately, the Saudi government is backed by the West and United States in particular, and this gives an immunity to Saudi royal family. And so the human rights violations, although the U.S. and Security State Department issued a series of reports about Saudi Arabia and classified as a state of particular concern, but we haven't seen any particular action being taken against the Saudi Arabia.
Yes. Now, what are the protests exactly calling for right now? We heard that they're calling for the withdrawal of Saudi troops from Bahrain and also for freedom of speech, perhaps freedom to practice religious duties and freedom of education. What else can you tell us?
Well, in fact, there are so many demands being adopted by the protesters, peaceful protesters in Saudi Arabia and in Eastern Province in particular. And since the invasion of Bahrain by the Saudi troops, the protesters demanded for the withdrawal of the Saudi forces and the so they called for the withdrawal of the Saudi troops from Bahrain. And besides that, there are so many demands regarding the human rights, the political prisoners, women rights, political reforms, so many demands and so many issues that have been raised by the protesters. Unfortunately, the Saudi royal family would not like to listen to the people, to the peaceful protest, And even, unfortunately, the latest statement made by King Abdullah, which he strengthened the role of the security and religious establishment while ignoring the demands of the majority of the people for political reforms. And this means, this indicates that the Saudis are insisting to continue human rights violations.
Professor Khashan, why is it that in Saudi Arabia, a country rich in resources, why is it so difficult to have the right of religious practice and education? I mean, Human Rights Watch says that there is official discrimination against Shiites, women, and children, especially in the Justice Department and education and religion.
Saudi Arabia is a traditional political system. And the pattern of decision-making over there depends on consensus. Therefore, there is no room for dissent or a different perspective that varies from that of the official version as presented by the regime.
You're talking about consensus within the ruling family.
Consensus, popular consensus. If there is a particular political trend that the government is pursuing, then the entire population must accept. In a tribal society such as Saudi Arabia's, the head of the tribe, or in this case, the head of the political system, is the provider. Therefore, the provider, the relationship between the provider and the population is uneven and depends on total loyalty. Any dissension, any divergent views are seen as acts of betrayal that necessitate punishment by the system. So the Saudi system has no room for protest or voicing disagreements, because that would be seen as revolt against the ruling elite. The Saudis being coerced, the Saudi system being coerced to implement the Wahhabi doctrine, which led to the rise of Saudi Arabia as we know it today back in 1932, mm-hmm. is compelled to implement the Wahhabi doctrine. The Wahhabi doctrine has no room for divergence views, and it does not accept plurality, mm-hmm. yes. including the right of women to express themselves.
That's an interesting point. That's what I wanted to ask you. But let me just take this phone call. We have Mr. Mustafa Alloush with us. He's joining us on the phone. He is member of the March 14th coalition here in Lebanon. Mr. Alloush, I want to get your take on this. Now, we heard from Professor Khashan and other people that there is a lot of discrimination in Saudi Arabia. That seems to be dictated by the Wahhabi rule in Saudi Arabia, which also calls against protesting for the right of freedom of speech. What can you tell me about this?
Well, irrespective of the speculation with regards to the Wahhabis or others, I believe that every ruler should listen to the needs of his of the population he rules. And all protests and all attempts to get more freedom and more rights should be regarded very well in the right way by any ruler in the world, including Saudi Arabia.
Yes. Now, when you take a look at the Saudi role, especially in Bahrain, that Saudi troops were sent to Bahrain, many say that this is a Sunni-Shiite issue, that there's this sectarian card that is being played here. How do you take a look at that?
Well, unfortunately, many of the issues in the region are interrelated, and many of the issues that are related to the rights of the population can be confounded or mistaken for something like confessional or sectarian. I believe that the authorities in Bahrain should listen to the population and should try to remedy for the problems of its population. Otherwise, things will retaliate later.
Yes, but what do you think that there's a lot of silence in the West concerning what is happening inside Saudi Arabia and Bahrain?
I don't think there is silence. I think that depending on the how much violence we see, people are reacting. And in fact, the most important part of the world now where you have a lot of violence is in Libya and Syria. And this is why you have the West, or any, not only the West, even us, looking at these two places, because of the amount of violence you see. Probably what happened in Bahrain was just, it was very important, but it was not as important as what happens in the other regions.
Well, of course, there was tens of people were killed and many mosques were destroyed. Don't you think that that is enough for media to cover it?
Well, definitely it is enough, but I think it got the cover that it needed in the time when it happened. Now, I don't know. I think that things are quiet. This is why people are heading towards the other heavy places.
Yes, you think they're quiet both in Saudi Arabia and Bahrain? Is that what you're saying?
Well, at least for the moment. I don't know whether things will happen in the future or something will emerge. But for the time being, the most important is what happens in Syria and Libya.
Yes. Important concerning what? Just concerning the whole region. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes, concerning the whole region, definitely.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let me get Mr. Brahim's take on this. Dr. Brahim, if you can hear me, what is your comment on saying that what is happening inside Saudi Arabia or Bahrain is probably not as important as what's happening inside Syria and Libya, and therefore you don't have enough Arab coverage on Saudi Arabia and Bahrain?
Well, there is a clearly biased position by the Arab media regarding the events in Bahrain and Syria. And it seems like there is insistence to focus heavily on the events in Syria while at the same time turning a blind eye to the events and to the atrocities in Bahrain. And this is one of the double standard examples that we are witnessing right now. I think also I have to emphasize that we have to distinguish between consensus in the Saudi and religious and the Wahhabi terms and sense, and the social contract in the modern sense, because Jurgis maybe tried to say that what happens in Saudi Arabia is based on internal consensus, and I think this is like a manipulation that we mystification made by the Saudi royal family. I think what happens in Saudi Arabia is a naked violation of human rights, backed by the West, and unfortunately by the ignorance also of the Arab media. What happens in Bahrain is very firm example that the Saudis are violating not only the international law, but also the Human Rights Convention signed by the international and all the nearly all the majority of the states all over the world.
Yes.
So I think it is very important to distinguish between these issues, because sometimes maybe we try to say that what happens in a country that should be taken into consideration while ignoring the events in another country.
Yes.
And this brings about the clash between values and rights, and between principles and interest. Unfortunately, this is where the international community is engulfed with now.
Yes, Professor Khashoggi, since you speak about the issue of Wahhabism, now you have Saudi troops are a main part of the GCC troops that entered Bahrain. They say that there is a lot of destruction of mosques, Shiite religious sites. Does that also implement the Wahhabi line of thinking here? Because this is what has been happening in Saudi Arabia for decades now. No Shiite religious sites inside Saudi Arabia. Are they trying to implement the same thing in Bahrain?
Well, I don't think the entrance of the Saudi troops into Bahrain had much to do with the enforcement of the Wahhabi doctrine. I think the Saudi royals regard Bahrain as the kingdom's soft belly, or to put it differently, as the first defense line of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. They feel that should any developments occur in Bahrain that enhances the situation of the Shiite majority, it might have repercussions on Saudi Arabia's eastern province and would increase the movement for change over there. Change, actually, the demands in the eastern province are for the recognition of basic human rights and enfranchisement in the political system. So the Saudi royals, who are apprehensive about what may happen in the eastern province, are taking taking preemptive measures in order to arrest the process for change in Bahrain.
Yes, now the King of Saudi Arabia said that the security of Bahrain and Saudi Arabia is indivisible. Now, if we say that the majority of Shiites in Saudi Arabia do get some political rights, how would that be a danger to the security of Saudi Arabia?
Again, for the Saudi royals, the idea of political pluralism is alien. Pluralism is seen as deprecating the hold of the Saudi royals on the political system, and they see it as the beginning of the process of genuine political development. Saudi Arabia invests heavily on economic development, but as far as political development, they seem to have other thoughts about it, because strategically they think that the universalization of the values of political development in Saudi Arabia may eventually call for contesting political office, and this is something that they do not contemplate.
All right, Dr. Ibrahim, how long do you think Saudi Arabia can distance itself when it comes to popular protests?
Well, as long as they have that much money to buy the citizens and pay briberies to the people, and to also to pay off the allies in the West, then they will survive, and they can resist any demands for reforms. But this will not take long, because they have to listen to their people. They have to concede. They have to give their people a considerable level of freedom in order to survive. I think
yes,
the Al Saud, when they have to say something to their people that they are not going to rule forever and use the same manner of governance.
Yes, now, since
so
you mentioned,
I think they have.
Yeah, since you mentioned the issue of money, now with the rise of popular governments in the entire region, would Saudi Arabia try to influence those new governments?
Well, this is the way of the Saudis looking at things in the region and in the whole world. They think by money they can abort pro-democracy movements in the whole world. They can silence the critiques in the West regarding their corruption, regarding their human rights abuses, and regarding also the pressures exerted by foreign powers regarding reforms. So they are using money in every way, in every issue, in order to commit to their old-fashioned and conservative way of governing, and so. But at the end of the day, they have to divert their way of ruling, in order to stay or to continue ruling the country.
Yes, now Professor Khashan, there are reports that the king of Saudi Arabia has allocated $140 billion to suppress domestic protests. Now, do you think that, like Dr. Ibrahim has said, that with this money, the Saudi kingdom can survive and we will not reach a state like we saw in Egypt and others where you have people protesting for more democracy?
Well, I don't see the Saudi royals in any imminent threat or an existential threat. You know, thanks to a freak geological accident and the presence of huge oil resources, it appears as if the Saudi royals are able to bribe the population. For years, they had a holiday from politics. No taxation, no representation. And they seem that they need to invest more these days in order to keep the population at bay. What struck me in this comprehensive economic development package, as mm-hmm. they called it, was creating 70,000 jobs in the armed forces. So this tells us something, that the security dimension has become salient in the thinking of the Saudi royal elite. Spending that much money will not have a long-term effect. If you have the practice of bribing the population, then this will become a regular activity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this is something that the Saudis cannot do indefinitely. One day they will have to face the unavoidable task of fulfilling people's demands. As the middle class rises, more demands for participation, for freedom and enfranchisement will present themselves to the authorities.
Yes. Now, one final question for you, Mr. Ibrahim. The majority of Bahrainis are against the entrance of Saudi troops into Bahrain. Many would look at Bahrain as a Saudi colony. Now, how do you look at it from your perspective? Do you think that this is some kind of an invasion, a Saudi invasion in Bahrain?
Well, in fact, the Saudis were motivated by the fear of disintegrating or being stormed by a popular revolution. That's why they took this action without counting the consequences of their of their invasion of Bahrain. I think that this will not take long, because at the end they have to withdraw their forces, they draw their troops, because the people of Bahrain will not. Will not be patient for a long time, will not tolerate mm-hmm. this kind of invasion, and they will resist peacefully or by any other means, because once they feel that these troops are trying to humiliate and destroy and erase and eradicate yes. the roots of this people, destruction of mosques, killing mm-hmm. people, arresting people, and innocent and doctors, physicians. These,
yes.
well, these acts and these measures will not be tolerated
yes.
by the people of Bahrain.
Uh-huh.
And I think the Saudis will pay a heavy price if they
yes,
continue.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. One final question. What is the Saudi role when it comes to other uprisings in the Arab world, especially when it comes to trying Mubarak, for instance, how they look at that?
Well, the Egyptian Prime Minister was recently in Saudi Arabia, and he toured the Gulf. I understand there is a tremendous pressure from Saudi Arabia at the Egyptian ruling military council to avoid humiliating Mubarak and putting him on trial.
Yes, why is that?
Because they don't want this to become a precedent that chief executives are tried before by a national court.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Well, unfortunately, time is up for
sure.
today. Professor Hilal Khashan, thank you
sure.
very much. Dr. Fuad Rahim, I want to thank you also for joining us today. Our email is metoday@presstv.com. Stay with Press TV. Goodbye for now.